And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hodnell. This is the Ken Hodnell Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is May the 11th. This day, this year is just whipping on by. 131st day of the year. Only 224 days remain till the year's over with. And this day in 330, Constantinople is consecrated. Now, be interesting to see if anybody's going to agree that Constantinople still exists, since it's now Istanbul. In 868, a copy of the Diamond Sutra is printed in China. It's the oldest known dated printed book. 912, Alexander becomes emperor of the Byzantine Empire. 1745, War of Austrian Succession. French forces defeat an Anglo-Dutch Hanoverian army. 1792, Robert Gray commands the first expedition to sail into the Columbia River. 1812, Prime Minister Spencer Percival is assassinated by John Bellingham in the lobby of the British House of Commons. Very dangerous place, the lobby of the British House of Commons. 1813, William Lawson, Gregory Blaxland, and William Wentworth discover a route across the Blue Mountains, opening up inland Australia to settlement. 1833, the Lady of the Lake strikes an iceberg off Newfoundland and sinks with the loss of up to 265 passengers and crew. 1846, President James K. Polk asks for a declaration of war against Mexico, starting the Mexican-American War. 1857, Indian Rebellion of 1857. Indian rebels seize Delhi from the British. 1858, Minnesota is admitted to the 32nd state of the U.S. 1880, seven people are killed in the Muscle Slough tragedy, which was a gun battle in California. But those that are not familiar with that particular little incident, it was a dispute over land titles between settlers and the Southern Pacific Railroad. Took place on a farm located 5.6 miles northwest of Hanford, California. The exact history of the incident has been the source of some disagreement, largely because popular anti-railroad sentiment in the 1880s interpreted the incident as a clear example of corrupt and cold-blooded corporate greed. There's so many things are a result of corporate greed. The 1889, an attack on a U.S. Army paymaster and escort results in the theft of over $28,000 and the award of two Medals of Honor. 1894, 4,000 Pullman Palace Car Company workers go on a Wildcat strike. Wildcat means that the union didn't sanction it. If the union says it's so, by God, it's so. 1910, Act of the Congress establishes Glacier National Park in Montana. 1943, American troops invade Attu Island and the Aleutian Islands in an attempt to expel occupying Japanese forces. The Japanese landed on several of the Aleutian Islands early in the war and stayed there for most of it. 1960, Adolf Eichmann is captured by the Mossad in Argentina. They did a show trial in Tel Aviv. 1963, racist bombings in Birmingham, Alabama disrupt nonviolence in the Birmingham campaign and precipitate a crisis involving federal troops. 1970, the 1970 Lubbock tornado kills 26 and causes $250 million in damages. 1973, citing government misconduct, Daniel Ellsberg charges for his involvement in releasing the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times are dismissed. 1985, 56 spectators die, more than 200 are injured in the Bradford City Stadium fire. 1987, Klaus Barbie goes on trial in Lyon for war crimes committed during World War II. He was another one captured in South America. 1996, after the aircraft's departure from Miami, a fire started by improperly handled Chemical oxygen generators in the cargo hold of an Atlanta-bound Value Jet Flight 592 causes that Douglas DC-9 to crash in the Florida Everglades. All 110 people on board are killed. 1997, Deep Blue, a chess-playing supercomputer, defeats Garry Kasparov in the last game of the rematch, becoming the first computer to beat a world champion chess player in a classic match format. 1998, India conducts 3 underground atomic tests in Pokhran. 2000, Second Chechen War. Chechen separatists ambush Russian paramilitary forces in the Republic of Ingushetia. 2010, David Cameron takes office as Prime Minister of the UK as the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats form the country's first coalition government since the Second World War. 2011, an earthquake of 5.1 magnitude hits Lorca in Spain. 2013, 52 people were killed in a bombing in Reyhanlı in Turkey. 2014, 15 people are killed and 46 injured in Kinshasa in a stampede caused by tear gas being thrown into soccer stands by police officers. 2016, 110 people are killed in an ISIL bombing in Baghdad. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Antimus of Rome. Gangulpus of Burgundy. Maholdus of Cluny. Mamertus, the first of the Ice Saints. National Technology Day in India. Minnesota, it's Statehood Day. And Vietnam Human Rights Day. Let's see what else we might have. In 1068, Matilda of Flanders, wife of William the Conqueror, is crowned Queen of England in Westminster Abbey in London. William's an ancestor. 1189, Holy Roman Emperor Frederick I Barbarossa and 100,000 crusaders depart Regensburg for the Third Crusade. Now that was all because a pope got a wild hair in his ear and decided the Holy Land had to be reconquered. 1310, 54 members of the Knights Templar burned at the stake in France for being heretics. They were actually burned at the stake because they wouldn't give the fair their treasury. 1421, Jews are expelled from Styria in Australia. 1502, Christopher Columbus begins his fourth and last trip to what he called the Indies. 1625, peasants besiege Frankenberg Estate in Upper Austria. 1647, Peter Stuyvesant arrives in New Amsterdam. 1674, Netherlands and Cologne sign a peace treaty. French Admiral Jean, in 1678, French Admiral Jean d'Estrées' fleet runs aground on the Avila Islands in Curaçao. 1689, Battle of Bantry Bay, French and English naval units duke it out. 1690, English troops of William Phipps conquer Port Royal in Nova Scotia. 1745, the Battle of Fontenoy in the Austrian Succession War takes place on this date. 1749, British Parliament accepts Consolidation Act. Reorganizes the Royal Navy. 1751, the Pennsylvania Hospital is founded by Dr. Thomas Bond and the one and only Benjamin. I never saw a girl didn't like Franklin. 1752, first U.S. fire insurance policies issued in Philadelphia. 1772, Amsterdam Theater destroyed by fire. 18 people are killed. 1784, Britain and Tipu Sahib of Mysore sign a peace treaty. 1800, French naturalist Jean-Baptiste Lamarck gives a lecture first outlining his theories of evolution at the Muséum National d'Histoire Naturelle in Paris, France. 1812, the waltz is introduced in English ballrooms. Some observers consider the dance disgusting and immoral. In 1816, the American Bible Society is formed. 1820, on this date, is the launch of the HMS Beagle, the ship that would later take Charles Darwin on his famous scientific voyage. 1841, American Charles Wilkes lands at Fort Nisqually in Puget Sound. 1850, the work is started on the first brick building to be erected in San Francisco. 1862, Confederate scuttle the CSS Virginia off Norfolk, Virginia. 1864, on this date, the Battle of Yellow Tavern in Virginia. In that battle, General Jeb Stuart is wounded. He eventually dies of that wound. 1865, Brigadier General Meriwether Jeff Thompson surrenders to the Union at Jacksonport, Arkansas. 1891, the Utsu scandal. While visiting Japan, Prince Nicholas, later Tsar Nicholas II, survives an assassination attempt. 1900, James J. Jeffries knocks out James J. Corbett in 23 rounds for the heavyweight boxing title. 1907, the Bank of San Francisco was incorporated on this date. 1907, a derailment outside Lompoc, California, kills 32 Shriners when their chartered train jumps off the tracks at a switch near Surf Depot. 1917, King George V grants the Royal Letters Patent to New Zealand. 1921, Tel Aviv is the first all-Jewish municipality to be founded. 1921, the Allied Supreme Command warns Germany to pay reparations or the entire Ruhr Valley will be occupied. Germany, of course, has no choice but agrees. 1924, Daimler, Motorin, Gesellschaft, and Benz & C. begin their first joint venture. It was later reincorporated as Mercedes-Benz. 1925, the Communist Party of Holland splits. 1927, Louis B. Mayer forms the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. 1929, the first regularly scheduled TV broadcast were outlined. It was going to be three nights a week. 1929, Dr. Annie Webb Blanton forms Delta Kappa Gamma Society in Austin, Texas. 1931, Credit Anstalt, Austria's largest bank, fails. That starts the financial collapse of Central Europe. 1931, the movie M. That was Fritz Lang's first sound film starring Peter Lorre, premiered in Berlin. 1941, the first Messerschmitt 109F is shot down over England. 1942, Japanese forces conquered Kiwilawa. 1943, the Hermann Goering Division of the German Army fighting in Tunisia surrenders. 1947, Laos accepts a constitution for a parliamentary democracy. Also in 47, B.F. Goodrich announces the development of a tubeless tire. It took place in Akron, Ohio. 1949, by a vote of 37-12, Israel becomes the 59th member of the UN. 1949, Siam renames itself Thailand. 1950, Belgian mine disaster, Borinage, 39 die. 1951, American engineer Jay Forrester applies for a patent for a computer core memory. 1955, Israel attacks Gaza. 1959, Cookie Cookie, Lend Me Your Comb by Ed Burns and Connie Stevens. It's number four. I met her. She was a beautiful young lady. Mm-hmm. 1960, the French liner France is launched. 1960, undercover agents of Israel's Mossad capture Adolf Eichmann in Buenos Aires and bring him back to Jerusalem. 1962, we sent troops into Thailand. 1967, the 100 millionth U.S. phone is connected. 1968, students and police battle it out in Paris. Hundreds are injured. 1969, British comedy troupe Monty Python is formed. That was Graham Chapman, John Cleese, Terry Gilliam, Eric Idle, Terry Jones, and Michael Palin. And that was comedy. 1970, Henry Morrow is murdered in a violent, racially motivated crime in Oxford, North Carolina. 1972, on the Dick Cavett Show, John Lennon announces his phone's tapped by the FBI. Well, my phone is tapped by the NSA, so there. 1976 was on this date was the last broadcast of Marcus Welby, M.D. on ABC TV. The problem is Marcus was too old to lift his stethoscope by this time. 1981, Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Cats, directed by Trevor Nunn, first appears at the West End in London. I got to see that. It was an unbelievable performance. 1985, Pope John Paul II arrival in the Netherlands is marred by violent protest. 1987, the first heart-lung transplant takes place in Baltimore. 1989, President George H.W. Bush, I'm not in the CIA, orders nearly 2,000 troops to be sent to Panama. 1994, six white racists are sentenced to death in South Africa. 2000, India's population officially reaches 1 billion. Asta Arora is named India's billionth baby. 2007, Pope Benedict XVI in his funny hat canonizes the first Brazilian-born saint, Frei Gavião. 2010, Imelda Marcos wins election to the House of Representatives of the Philippines, representing Ilocos Norte province. 10th, Rudolf Hess parachuted into Scotland, intending to negotiate a peace deal with the British. And Hitler said he didn't know anything about it, and he was livid when he heard. Hess had met the Duke of Hamilton at the Berlin Olympics in 1936 and learned that the Duke was a member of a far-right group that was interested in a German-English agreement. He hoped that Hamilton arranged for him to meet King George VI. Thought he could get the king to sack Winston Churchill and Britain could make peace with Germany and join forces against the Soviet Union. Didn't quite work that way. Well, we've come to the end of our history section. There is number of interesting items in space. There is a very large, possibly an asteroid said to be heading our way, and it could hit. And of course, there's been a number of things photographed by the Hubble telescope that had something I wanted to cover. Where is it at? There's something called the Cosmic Reef that's been sighted by the Hubble telescope. Its sparkling, brilliant structure resembles a cosmic core. The telescope's actually been in space for 30 years, so. Okay. It was launched April 24th, 1990. And every year for its anniversary, the Hubble team releases a new special anniversary image. And they've each issued several that they call Cosmic Reefs. So, well, we've been talking about creatures of the night. And among those, there's a Reverend F.G. Lee wrote a book called Glimpses in the Twilight. Published in 1988, filled with all manner of amazing and chilling tales, including one about a terrible monster bird. And Lee, who extensively researched that story, said in the middle of the last century, remember he wrote it in 1888, about 1749, owing to several remarkable circumstances that had recently occurred, a conviction became universal among the inhabitants of the village that the vaults under the church of West Drayton near Uxbridge were haunted. He said strange noises were heard in and around the sacred building, and the sexton of that day, a person utterly devoid of superstition, was on inquiry and examination compelled to admit that certain unaccountable occurrences in regard to the vault had in fact taken place. Others maintain that three persons from an adjacent manor house and company had gone to look through a grating in the side of the foundation of the church. It's there for ventilation for the vault. And from which screams and noises were heard. And they'd even seen a very large raven perched on one of the coffins. Now, according to Reverend Lee, this strange bird was seen more than once by the then parish clerk pecking from within the grating and furiously fluttering about within the enclosed vault. On another occasion, it was seen by other people in the body of the church itself. Wife of the parish clerk and her daughter often saw it. Eventually, though, the bird's reign of terror was brought to an end, according to the Reverend. The local bell ringers all professed to deny its existence, and the parents one evening came together to ring a peal when they were told by a youth that the big raven was flying around inside the chancel. Coming together into the church with sticks and stones and a lantern, four men and two boys found it fluttering about among the rafters. And they gave chase, flinging at it and shouting at it, endeavoring to catch it. Driven from hither and thither for some time, and twice or even three times beaten with a stick, so that one of its wings seemed to have been broken and made to drop, the bird fell down, wounded, with expanded wings, screaming and fluttering into the eastern part of the chancel, where two of the men, on rushing towards it to secure it and driving it into a corner, vaulted over the communion rails and violently proceeded to seize the bird. Well, according to the story, it at once sank wounded and exhausted onto the floor as they believed in their certain grasp and they were going to put an end to this bird's reign of terror, and all of a sudden it was gone. In relation to this particular weird saga, the wife of Reverend R.L. Berg, who served at the church of the West Drayton in the 1800s, wrote to Reverend Lee and said, "It was many years ago, and I'd quite forgotten until I got your note. I remember feeling persuaded a bird must have gotten into the family vault, and in going outside to look into it through the iron bars to try if anything could be seen, sounds were not always in the chancel at the same town." Neil Arnold added a piece of data to the story. He said a record of the strange bird also exists from 1869 when two sisters claimed to have seen an enormous bird while visiting the church. They claimed the bird would have looked more at home in the zoological gardens than it did in the vault of the church. Well, there's been a lot of discussions about pterodactyls, and there's even been some seen in England. Imagine driving home late one night across the foggy moors of central England and coming across what looks nothing less than a living, breathing pterodactyl. Well, you might think this couldn't happen, but it has. From 1982 to 1983, a wave of sightings of such a creature, presumed extinct for over 65 million years, occurred in an area called the Pennines, better known as the backbone of England, and comprises of rolling hills and mountains. Now, as far as can be determined, the first encounter occurred at a place with the highly apt name of the Devil's Punch Bowl. This took place September 12, 1982. That was when a man named William Green came forward with an astonishing story of what he encountered at Shipley Glen Woods. It was a large, gray-colored creature that flew in a haphazard style and possessed a pair of large leathery-looking wings. Now, the description of those wings is notable, since it effectively rules out a significantly sized feathery bird, and it does indeed place matters into a pterodactyl category. 72 hours later, a woman named Jean Schofield had the misfortune to see the immense beast at the West Yorkshire town of Yeardon. That the thing was heading for the Leeds Bradford Airport provoked fears in Schofield's mind of a catastrophic mid-air collision between a passenger plane and this very large wing thing. Almost inevitably, the local media heard of the sightings, and the story was given pride of place in the newspapers of the day. And while the theory that a large bird of prey had escaped from a menagerie or zoo satisfied the skeptics, it didn't go so well with the witnesses, who were sure that what they had encountered was something straight out of the Jurassic era. Rather notably, the media attention brought forth additional witnesses, including Richard Pollock, who claimed that he and his dog had been dive-bombed by the creature, which descended on the pair with alarming speed, screaming as it did so, according to his description. Pollock hit the ground, protecting his dog. Given the fact the creature was practically on top of him, Pollock couldn't fail to get a good look at it. He described it as a reptilian with a face that looked like a cross between a crocodile and a bat, which is actually not a bad description of a pterodactyl. Well, what it then followed then was there was a lull in reports, but they exploded again in May of 1983. There was a sighting at Thackley on May 6th by a witness whose attention to the creature was provoked by the sudden sound of heavy wings beating above him. Again, it was a case that not only caught the media's attention, but provoked others to come forward. One of those witnesses that came forward was a Mr. Harris, who said that in November 1977 at Totley, he saw just such a flying monster that soared overhead, growling as it did. And he was adamant what he saw was nothing less than a full-blown pterodactyl. Now, quite naturally, further attempts were made to try and lay the matter to rest, including the amusing but utterly unproven theory that the pterodactyl was actually a radio-controlled model of some sort. And claims of escaped exotic birds were once again trotted out, but without a shred of evidence to support them. A few more somewhat vague reports trickled in. For the most part, though, the curious affair of the Pennines pterosaur was over. If we can rule out models and mistaken identity, well, what does that leave us with? Seems downright ridiculous to give credence to the idea that a pterodactyl was flying around the skies in northern England, and possibly from 1977 to 83, and yet that seems to have been precisely what was going on. There's another explanation that might just work. It's been suggested maybe some of the astonished and terrified witnesses encountered was not a living pterodactyl, but a ghost of a pterodactyl. Now, millions of people believe that the human soul or life force lives on after death. So, why shouldn't that be the case with animals as well? Certainly, there are numerous cases on record of people who claim that beloved deceased pets have returned to visit them, in spectral form, of course. And it's important to note that there's some evidence that suggests the ghostly theory is the correct one. Joshua Warren's a highly respected ghost hunter from Asheville, North Carolina. Among his many investigations of the spooky kind, one in particular stands out. In the early to mid-2000s, he investigated and documented a huge amount of supernatural activity at the Jackson Farm in Lancaster in South Carolina. Ghostly apparitions were commonplace on the large property, particularly so late at night. One of them, amazingly, was described as being a spectral winged bird that had a wide wingspan and a long neck with some kind of huge bird head on it. Terrified witnesses. One Adam Jackson drew a picture of the ethereal monster he encountered. It'd be hard to find a better image of a pterodactyl than the one he drew. Well, from South Carolina and England, let's wander on down to South America. One of the strangest yet intriguing accounts of giant winged monsters in our very midst came from a man named James Harrison. He lives in Liverpool, England. According to Ken Gerhardt's book, Big Bird, it was in February 1947 that Harrison, who, along with several fellow adventurers and explorers, were boating along the Manaus River. That's a tributary of the Amazon, don't you know? And they encountered something startling. It was a flock of five huge flying creatures surfing the sky at an alarmingly low level. Due to the close proximity, Harrison and his colleagues are easily able to discern the creatures were leathery of skin, brown in color, and had wingspans that exceeded 12 feet. Wings of the creatures are described as being ribbed, while their oddly flattened heads were attached to very long necks. In other words, that sounded very much like pterodactyls from a time long gone by. Cryptozoologist Ken Gerhard noted that some skeptics suggested that Harrison and his team had really viewed with nothing more stranger than storks. Most unlikely possibility, and of course it came from Ivory Tower scientists. And particularly it was strange when one remembers that the entire group was able to see the animals close up rather than at a distance. Of pterosaurs in South America, according to Gerhardt, evidence of relic pterosaurs in South America can be found on the controversial carvings known as the Ica Stones of Peru. Local physician named Dr. Javier Cabrera believes that the thousands of intricately carved stones may be ancient, though their true age can't be scientifically validated. Some of the stones, of course, might be fakes generated by local artisans trying to capitalize on the tourist trade. Original stones allegedly discovered by a farmer near the mysterious Nazca lines back in the 1960s. Many of these carvings portray humans living alongside dinosaurs. Few stones in particular display obvious renditions of men riding on the backs of living pterosaurs and pterodactyls. Beyond any shadow of a doubt, though, that would be an incredible sight to see. Well, let's talk about one of the strangest of all monsters. And this comes from Iowa. It's a winged thing. It's called the Van Meter Monster. Now, the mystery of this creature begins in December 1903 when a terrifying beast plunged the town of Van Meter into states of hysteria and fear. The story began with a resident of the town, Dr. A.C. Alcott, whose extraordinary encounters made the pages of the New York-based Watertown Herald. According to the press, the doctor grabbed a shotgun and ran outside the building where he saw a monster, which seemed half human and half beast. He said it had great bat-like wings. A dazzling light that nearly blinded him came from a blunt, horn-like protuberance in the middle of the creature's forehead, and it gave off a stupefying odor that almost overcame him. The doctor discharged his weapon and fled into his office, barred the doors and windows, and hid under the desk until morning. For some baffling reason, there were fears in town that the monster would raid the local bank, empty it of cash. I don't know where the monster would want to spend his money, but this led one Peter Dunn to spend the night in the bank with a loaded gun. Now, this was a very wise move, according to Watertown Herald. In the early hours, Dunn was momentarily blinded by a bright light that filled the bank. The creature had returned. Eventually, Dunn recovered his senses sufficiently to distinguish the monster and fired through the window. The plate glass and the glass were torn out, of course, and the monster vanished, without the money, I might add. Next morning, imprints of large three-toed feet were discernible in the soft earth outside the window. Plaster casts were, of course, taken. The article continues that another sighting was made by one O.V. White, a doctor in town who saw the creature climbing down a telephone pole, using a beak much as the same manner as a parrot. As the creature reached the ground, according to the Watertown Herald, it seemed to travel in leaps like a kangaroo, using its huge featherless wings to assist it. It didn't give off any light. Doctor fired at it and wounded it. Apparently everybody in town was carrying a gun. The shot was fired by an overpowering odor. Sidney Gregg, attracted by the shot, arrived in time to see the monster fly away. But that wasn't the end of the story, though. Oh, no. Climax came the next night. Old town was aroused by this time. Professor Martin, principal of the schools, decided that from the description it was an antediluvian animal. Shortly after midnight, J.L. Platt, foreman of the brick plant, heard a peculiar sound in an abandoned coal mine. And as the men had reported a similar sound before, a body of volunteers started to conduct an investigation. Presently, the monster emerged from the shaft, accompanied by a smaller one. A number of shots were fired at it without any effect. Newspaper rounded things off with the following comment. The whole town was aroused and the vigil was maintained the rest of the night. But it didn't have any results until just before dawn when the two monsters returned and disappeared down the shaft. Well, maybe he's just coming home. Let's go back to England. What was without a shadow of a doubt the strangest of all stories of an unidentified flying entity seen in the skies of England came to light in February 19, 2009. Mike Lockley, then the editor of the now-closed Chase Post newspaper that covered the Staffordshire, England town of Cannock, stated that nothing less than a flying man had been seen soaring over and around the nearby Cannock Chase woods. Now, before we get to the heart of the strange saga, it's worth noting that the Cannock Chase, a large area of heathland and forest, has been a veritable hotbed of high strangeness of the monstrous kind for literally decades. Sightings of large black cats with glowing eyes, spectral black hounds, Bigfoot-type creatures, werewolf-style entities, and even what are described as giant snakes have been seen deep in the heart of the Cannock Chase. Now, in that sense of the word, the flying monster man of the Cannock Chase was just the latest in a long line of bizarre creatures to surface in and above those dense and mysterious woods. Well, five locals contacted the Post after witnessing the figure traveling, unaided, over houses at about 11 in the morning on a Sunday. One described it as a Superman moment, a clear case of to Chatsmore and beyond, according to the newspaper. According to Mike Lockley, eagle-eyed Bony Hay villager Clive Wright believes that those who reckon they witnessed something supernatural talking a load of kryptonite. 68-year-old who spotted the flying man from the living room window of his Sunnymead Road home believes that the pilot was traveling with a kind of a jetpack, some sort of Stratone engine that made famous in the 1965 James Bond movie Thunderball. Now, Clive's wife, Janet, who's 68, and 14-year-old grandson Nicholas also witnessed this so-called rocket man. To say it was strange would be an understatement. And the bottle didn't come into it because nobody was drinking. According to Clive, at first I was watching quite a number of seagulls and noticed what I thought was one in the middle moving quite slowly. Got up to take a closer look and realized I was looking at a flying man. I searched the sky for the plane he'd bailed out of, but I didn't see one. Post additionally quoted Clive Wright as saying all I could see was this man traveling in a controlled straight line, traveling from Raycroft shops across to General Shaw Common. I immediately went upstairs to get my binoculars and went back out in the backyard, but he was gone. Some kind of Dan Dare spaceman, that's what it looks like to me. One explanation is that he was wearing a jetpack, although I'm surprised he was traveling over a densely populated area at the time. Well, whether an intrepid flyer equipped with a high-tech piece of aerial gadgetry, this Mothman wannabe was checking out new areas or something else entirely. But the mystery of Staffordshire's flying, whatever it was, is still a mystery. Well, let's go to Winona, Wisconsin, September 2009. A researcher spent a week there with a team from the History Channel's popular cryptozoology-themed series Monster Quest. They were there to investigate reports of large winged beasts that in some respects sounded not unlike the infamous Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Other reports, of course, describe more of a giant bird-like creature. And several even seemed like a bizarre combination of both. Being there for a week gave the researchers a very good opportunity to dig deeply into some of the sightings, to gain the confidence and trust of the locals and see what they could uncover. And it looks like they uncovered quite a bit. One of the stories uncovered for the show revolved around a Winona woman who back in the 60s had seen a large winged humanoid creature standing on a rooftop on the edge of town. The wings were bat-like, black in color, and spread wide. Its red eyes stared malevolently at her as she watched at it from the yard of her house that was directly next door to the house on top of which the man stood. For a few moments, the terrified woman and the creature locked eyes, after which it took to the skies in an incredibly fast fashion. Now, somewhat strangely, it didn't take off by flapping its wings, as one might assume. It simply spread its wings widely and rose vertically, not unlike a helicopter. Woman was baffled, on account of how it could do so without utilizing those powerful looking wings. And of course, nobody had an answer for it. Interestingly, when years later the woman saw the 2001 movie Jeepers Creepers, she declared to her family the thing she saw all those years earlier was practically identical in appearance to the creature on the show. What can be said about this except Jeepers Creepers? Then there's the story that came from the employees of McDonald's in town. Several of the long-term staff recalled how only a few years earlier, which would have put it around 2005 or 6, a truck driver had come into the McDonald's in what was clearly a shaken state. As they crowded around him, he told them of seeing what he described as a giant eagle soaring a certain peak that overlooks the town itself. As it did so, it emitted loud screech-like sounds. Most odd of all, according to the truck driver, although there was more than a few people in the road at the time, the sighting occurred during broad daylight. Nobody else seemed to have seen the creature but him. It was as if it had manifested for him and for him alone. Well, also on the Monster Quest agenda was a trek to and up the nearby huge Trempealeau Mountain. A very good reason for this. The mountain, which is contained inside the Perrault State Park, named after French explorer Nicolas Perrault, has long-standing traditions of sightings of huge birds, not unlike the one reported by the truck driver in the early 2000s. Many of these stories and legends originated with Native American tribes who believed the creatures to be the legendary Thunderbirds, which are an integral part of their lore and history. Well, the Monster Quest crew searched the mountains for the best part of a day and a night, and rather intriguingly did find some large branches that hung over the sometimes nearly vertical edges of the mountain. None of them could deny they would have provided large winged things with perfect points of takeoff and allowing them to make use of the thermals to help keep their forms in the air. Late at night, they even used full-volume call blasting equipment, played the calls of owls and eagles as we talked to try and entice the quarry to show itself. But it didn't. However, the witness testimony, combined with the Native American accounts of centuries past, convinced everybody that Trempealeau Mountain and its surroundings was, and maybe still is, home to fearsome flyers of the unknown kind. While in Monona, they also dug deep into a very bizarre case that occurred in La Crosse, Wisconsin in September 2006. Maybe not coincidentally, the witness was himself Native American, member of the Cherokee tribe, and somebody had a traumatic and terrifying experience late at night. Linder Godfrey, who's a fairly well-known monster hunter, commented on this case. She said, "Imagine driving down a country road in the dark, minding your own business, and suddenly a screaming man-sized creature with bat-like wings flies at your windshield, stares at you, and then swoops upward into the night sky. Happened to a 53-year-old La Crosse man who prefers to be known by his Cherokee name, Wahali, and the man's 25-year-old son was with him. Ominously, after seeing the beast, both father and son felt nauseous and became violently sick to the point they were forced to make a screeching stop at the side of the road. Pretty much everybody in the Monster Quest shoot came away from the event impressed by the witness testimony, by the centuries-old lore, and by the additional and previously unheard-of stories that came their way. Clearly, something monstrous is soaring in the skies of Wisconsin, particularly in the vicinity of Winona." Well, let's talk about the wyvern, a denizen of North Wales. An approximately mile-long body of water in Clwyd, North Wales, Clunach Lake is renowned for the story of its resident monster, a wyvern. The story dates back centuries, although the precise dates not really known. Within ancient legend, the wyvern is very much a dragon-like animal, one to be avoided at all costs. Reptilian and sporting large membranous wings of a bat-like appearance, it stands out on two powerful legs and has a powerful tail that it uses to sting and kill its prey, not unlike a scorpion. Some cases, and just like the dragon of old, the wyvern is said to occasionally breathe fire. And this all brings us to the monster of Sinic Lake. For as long as anybody could remember, the lake and its surrounding landscape made for a peaceful and relaxing environment. But all that changed when a deadly wyvern decided to swoop down on the lake and make it its home. There was no longer any tranquility. The creature was undeniably monstrous, described as fear-filled locals as looking like a huge, coiling, and writhing monster with a humped back and an undulating neck. And on its back were two wings, and its feet displayed razor-sharp claws of the kind that could tear a person to pieces. Its breath was reportedly poisonous and green. In no time, the Welsh wyvern began to eat its way through the local population of sheep, cattle, and pigs. Terrified village folks stayed behind locked doors after the sunset, which was when the monster surfaced from the waters of the lake. But there came a time when enough was enough for the locals. A local warlock known as the Wizard of Glenwood believed that he stood a good chance of slaying the creature. As he knew, all previous attempts to kill the creature had failed as a result of its noxious breath causing instant death to anyone and everyone exposed to it. So the wizard had a brainwave. He decided to round up a team of archers who could shoot the wyvern from a distance. Now, it was all to no avail. It was as if the beast had a sixth sense about it. Whenever the bowmen were around, the wyvern would stay carefully below the waters. Finally, there was a breakthrough when it proved to be the turning point in this tumultuous affair. One particular morning, a bright and sunny one, the wyvern left the waters of the lake and slithered its way onto the shore, where it proceeded to bask under the hot sun. As luck would have it, a young shepherd boy named Meriden happened to be in the area and saw the creature asleep as he was directing his sheep to his father's farm. Now, fortunately for him and his sheep, the creature was deep in its slumber, as was evidenced by its hideous skin-crawling snoring, which was more like the hiss of a gigantic snake. Its body moved rhythmically, its strange form glistening like wet leather. Now, realizing this was quite possibly the one time, more than any other, where the wyvern could be killed, he raced to nearby St. Clamer Abbey and breathlessly told the monks of what he had just seen. He asked for a much-revered axe that hung in the abbey, suggesting if anything could kill the creature, it was surely that axe, which was supposedly endowed with magical powers. Well, the monks agreed, and in minutes, Erdwin was heading back to Quinish Lake for a battle to the death. But the question was, whose death? Meriden wasn't so sure. Nevertheless, he was determined to do his very best to rid the area of this loathsome creature. Fortunately, when he got back to the spot where the creature slept, he could see it hadn't moved. But it was clear there was no time to lose. He used all his might to raise the axe over his head and brought it down hard and fast on the neck of the sleeping creature. In a split second, so sharp was the axe, the head and neck were severed. The jaws of the severed head snapped wildly and widely in a fashion similar to a headless chicken, while the neck thrashed around for a few minutes before falling limp. The nightmare was over, no thanks to a powerful warlock, but all thanks to a young shepherd. Well, let's talk about vampires and bloodsuckers. It's January 6, 1954, Lumeter, North Carolina. Robsonian newspaper published a sensational article titled "Vampire Strikes at Woman, Police Chief Warns Parents." Began with a startling style. Worried parents kept a close eye on their children today as a strange vampire beast continued to roam the countryside. Now that's a great headline to wake up to in the morning. Indeed, sightings and killings have been going on since December 29th and plunged the good folk of the small town of Bladenboro, North Carolina, into states of fear and outrage. Although many eyewitnesses described the animals looking like a black leopard, there were some who said it was more akin to a sleek-looking bear. According to the confusion, the tracks of the creature are said to be dog-like rather than feline in appearance. It was basically a creepy conundrum, to be sure. The most terrifying aspect of the story, though, was the claim of both the newspaper and the witnesses that the creature sucks blood from his victims. And thus was quickly born a vampire legend. And it was born very quickly. The victims were, for the most part, dogs. There was, though, one attack on a person, the unfortunate soul being Miss C.E. Kinlaw. Fortunately, she wasn't injured, animal simply lashed out at her when its attempts to attack and kill her dogs were thwarted. She later said, after we first saw it, my husband scared it away. It circled back and came running toward the porch where I was standing. I screamed and it stopped on all fours, turned and ran off. You know, the Bible talks about sights and wonders before the end of time. This could be one of them. One of those whose dogs unfortunately were killed by the creature was Johnny Voss. He said, my dogs put up a good fight. There's blood all over the porch, big puddles of it. And it was a big pool of saliva on the porch as well. It killed one dog at 10:30 and left it lying there. My dad wrapped the dog up in a blanket. Thing came back and got that dog. Nobody seen that dog since. 1:30 in the morning, it came back and killed the other dog and took it off. We found it 3 days later in a hedgerow. Top of one of the dog's heads was torn off and its body was crushed and wet like it had been in that thing's mouth. Other dog's lower jaw was torn off. Well, as the carnage continued, there were stories of full-grown pigs found with their skulls crushed and their limbs torn off in violent, bloody fashion. Other farm animals were discovered dead, their severed heads completely missing. The entire town was on the edge, no question about that. Children were kept away from school and practically nobody wanted to walk the streets of town after sunset. Now, this was hardly surprising that a deadly, monstrous killer was in their midst. Unnamed witness commented, I got two dogs, Niggy the little one and Pee-wee the brown one. It's bigger. Me and my wife were sitting there in the living room. We heard the dogs get awful restless. My front light came on and Larry Moore had his back light on. I glanced out the window and saw this thing. Had me plumb spellbound, about 20 inches high, had a long tail, about 14 inches. Color was dark, had a face exactly like a cat. Only ever, I ain't never seen a cat that big. It was rocking around stealthy and sneaky and moving about trying to get to Niggy and Pee-wee. I jumped my shotgun, loaded it, went out to shoot it, but it moved into the darkness right away and I couldn't find him again. Well, that was the sheer level of hysteria that gripped Bladenboro on that January 5th, 1954. More than 500 people, all armed to the teeth with rifles and pistols, roamed the area's swamps and woods, something of which the local police took a decidedly dim view, don't you know? Authorities took an even dimmer view, and on January 6th, the figure was estimated to be in the region of 800, and 24 hours later, it rose to over 1,000. Well, there were signs of relief when a bobcat was shot and killed in the area, and a leopard was reportedly hit by a car. Problematic, though, was the fact that the attacks continued, something that suggested the animal was not a solitary one. Worse, there might even been an entire pack of these dog, cat, bear drainers of blood. Whatever the truth of the matter, by mid-January, the killings were finally over. Everybody, of course, sighed with the relief. The saga of the vampire beast of Bladenboro remains a part of the town's history, though, to the extent that in 2008, the History Channel's popular show Monster Quest dedicated an entire episode to the legend of the blood-sucking, skull-crushing beast that provoked so much terror all those decades ago. Well, on that note, we come to the end of tonight's show. We've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, we'll be talking about stories of the strange. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.